From KUOW 94.9 Seattle, I'm Ross Reynolds. There are more than a million charities in the U.S., and they raise $1.5 trillion a year. But former NPR chief executive Ken Stern thinks we don't ask enough about the charities we give to. Ken Stern today works for a marketing and advertising firm he founded called Palisades Media Ventures. His new book is called With Charity for All: Why Charities Are Failing and a Better Way to Give. Ken Stern joins us today from NPR studio in New York City. Thanks for taking the time, Ken.
Thank you for having me, Ross.
So why does the subtitle of your book claim that charities are failing? They're not all failing, are they?
Well, I think you sort of set it up right. So the charitable sector is huge, 1.1 million charities, $1.5 trillion in annual revenues, and about 10% of the American workforce. I think charities are failing. When I say charities are failing, I mean they're failing in their charitable mission for really two independent reasons. One is when you start looking at charities, there are lots of charities that look, feel, and act like for-profit businesses. The best example of that is charitable hospitals. They're more profitable than for-profit hospitals. They pay their CEOs into the millions, and they provide no charitable services any more than for-profit hospitals do, and much less than government hospitals. The second problem that I found out during sort of three-year journey through the charitable sector is that very few charities can actually prove in any sort of meaningful way through research and testing that they are actually accomplishing their goals. There are some great ones. It was actually a privilege to talk about some of those in my book, but they're outnumbered and sort of outgunned by charities that either flourish despite the fact that the evidence is adverse to them, or most the fact is most charities don't even know one way or the other whether they're successful or not. And mostly they can do that because donors don't actually seem to care.
You take a look at some specific examples, among them the Red Cross and how they performed in Katrina and other disasters. Where do you see their failures?
So the Red Cross is actually a really interesting example to me because it is a story of market failure. And to me, much of the problem in the charitable sector is bad signals that affect how charities are run. So the problem that Red Cross is, think of the Red Cross as a supply line company. FedEx, Walmart, the United States military pour billions into actually running great supply chains. The Red Cross doesn't. It can't, because people and donors only give it to the Red Cross when a tragedy occurs, and then money pours in for those victims. People don't invest in the next victim. And that's actually why the Red Cross continuously struggles, because they're not able to build the infrastructure that's necessary to really run a great sort of supply line and rescue company.
And there's just a lot of inventory control. You mentioned that a lot of the stuff that was sent down to help out the victims of Katrina, there were radios without batteries in them. There was food that was not really usable any longer. There doesn't need to be a lot of insight into what things actually were needed.
You have to think about sort of the challenge that the Red Cross has in Katrina is they have the largest civilian call-up in American history, about 250,000 people across the American South. And just think about sort of all the inventory control, all the people challenges, all the knowledge challenges that go into that, and they have nowhere near the infrastructure necessary to do that. The British Red Cross actually called it sort of a dangerous combination of ignorance and arrogance. And that's, I think, a little bit of the continuing story of the Red Cross.
Ken Stern is talking to us about his new book, With Charity for All: Why Charities Are Failing and a Better Way to Give. You also give the example of, on a much different scale, of the many charities that are working to provide clean water in the developing world. Why is that an example of charities failing?
Well, because I think this is where, again, this is about where charities have a story that can sell. And their story is all about how they can drill wells. Wells that bring fresh water to people. And that's a great first chapter of a story, but it's not the last chapter. For water projects to work, you have to not only drill the well, but you have to actually do a whole lot of maintenance and repair. And what happens is it's relatively easy to raise money for drilling, virtually impossible to convince donors to pony up for maintenance and repair. So you have all these abandoned water projects across Asia and Africa, and that's really the story of sort of the challenge of clean water for much of the world at this point.
How do we as donors evaluate charities on this basis? This Charity Navigator, we've spoken to them before on this program. They take a look at how much money is going to overhead in a particular charity, but that can be kind of a misleading metric to use. How does the individual make a good judgment on whether it's working or not?
Well, let's start with the fact, Ross, that you have to make a good judgment. You have to put in the work. The vast majority of Americans, I say in the book that Americans watch more time, spend more time in one day watching television than they do investing in investigating charities an entire year. And that's actually an overstatement. Americans actually are quite an overstatement in the wrong direction. Americans are actually quite generous, $2,700 per household per year, but they spend virtually no time investigating, looking into whether charities are effective or not. People give to their alma maters, they give to their friends' charities, they give to prominent brand names. They don't look to see whether charities are effective or not.
You one example, though, of a charity that's doing things a bit differently on a vast scale is the Gates Foundation right here in Seattle. They have a reputation of being much like a startup company, bringing entrepreneurial vigor to the way that they look at projects, constantly evaluating them to see whether they are exceeding. Are there some charities that you see as really doing the investigation on their work to make sure that it's working out right?
Yeah, sure. So I view the Gates Foundation a little bit differently. I view them as a funder rather than an actual operating charity. And what they have come after some hard lessons along the way, especially around small schools, is they've become very rigorous about data and data analysis. And that's actually been a big plus in a lot of sectors of the charitable world. In terms of actual operating charities, I think there, of course, in a world of 1.1 million, there are going to be quite a few that are quite good. I write about an organization out of Memphis called Youth Villages, which has reinvented sort of the care of emotionally and behaviorally troubled youth based upon sort of extraordinary research. They actually have a great backstory. They were in business for 20 years until they started actually researching, following the kids who came through their programs and realizing they weren't successful. And they came to a choice where they could either keep going. No one was actually looking at the data besides them, or they could reinvent themselves. And they reinvented themselves, and now they have a 17-person research department which tracks every kid through the program and for 2 years afterwards. And they've had great results because they've actually invested in that type of research, benchmarking, and accountability to themselves and to their stakeholders.
Ken, you mentioned that Americans spend much more time watching TV every day than they spend researching the charities that they give hundreds and thousands and tens of thousands of dollars to. If they were to spend more time researching charities, where would they find the information they need to make a judgment call?
Yeah, that's part of the puzzle, Ross. It's a great question. I don't have – the marketplace actually doesn't have the full answer. I actually recommend that people start banding together and actually doing some of their own research together, looking at reports, looking at research. It's actually quite a lot of data out there eventually. Charities, by and large, don't provide that kind of data to their funders, but it's out there if you look. And you mentioned Charity Navigator, which I was quite hard on in my book because I think the signals that it sends about salaries and overhead really actually obscure the issue, which is about charitable effectiveness. But last month, they announced for the first time sort of a great right turn on their part, and that they're going to start what they call Charity Navigator 3.0, which is going to be the first sort of global attempt to provide effectiveness rating for charities. They're not there yet. It's a huge undertaking for them, but the fact that they announced it and are heading that direction, I think, is a great signal to the charitable marketplace.
Ken Stern, you call for market-based institutions and incentives. Like what?
Well, I think you got to follow the money. The things that when the charities, I think, are actually quite smart about what works. They tell stories, they tell narratives that work. That's what brings in donors right now. If donors were more selective in terms of requiring charities to show their effectiveness, that would change it. That's the marketplace. It's a demand marketplace. And that's individual donors, but probably more importantly, the federal government. People think of the charitable sector as being funded by individual donation. To a certain extent, that's true, $300 billion a year. But the feds put in about $500 billion just by themselves. And they have the greatest leverage to actually start requiring charities to show evidence of effectiveness in ways they don't do now.
How? How would the federal government do that?
Well, I think that's actually sort of that's a tracking and evaluation investment that they don't make. But they've actually – it's actually sort of interesting. They've also signaled for the first time the Office of Management and Budget about 6 months ago said that starting in 2014, they're going to require their charitable grantees to start providing more evidence of effectiveness, actual data-driven analysis of whether they're effective or not in providing programming. The way that most federal grant, a lot of federal grant programs right now are sort of lowest bidder, it is inputs, not outputs. And the change to here's what we're going to do to here's what we're going to produce, here's what the results are going to be is actually a big change in thinking about how charities and really government works.
Ken Stern is my guest. He spent 10 years at NPR as chief operating officer and chief executive. And he began his media career at Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty. His new book is called Charity for All. Got to talk about NPR a little bit, Ken.
Sure, sure. Fire away, Ross.
You were there when Joan Kroc, the widow of McDonald's founder Ray Kroc, donated $250 million to NPR. And it was called at that time a gift because she was such a loyal and devoted listener and fan of National Public Radio. It was the largest gift ever given to a cultural institution, or it was said to have been. You revealed Joan Kroc not really a passionate and determined NPR listener at all.
Yeah, it's true. So I write with some reservations about Mrs. Kroc, who was extraordinarily generous. And so let me tell you what sort of I admire about Mrs. Kroc before I get to the meat of the story that I tell in the book, which is she gave away billions during her lifetime and her death. She didn't have to. She could have given it to her family, to her cat. But she chose to give it to charitable institutions. And I actually admire the other thing she did, which is actually very unusual among the very rich. She gave to the institutions that serve the poor and the dispossessed, like the Salvation Army. And that sounds like a logical thing for someone to do. But if you look at, for instance, the largest 50 gifts last year, charitable gifts last year, not a single one of them was to an institution that primarily serves the needy. So I really admired her commitment both to charities in general and to those less fortunate in their lives. But one of the things I observed, and I've observed about donors, that they're very anecdotal in how they operate, what they give to. It's very emotionally driven without sort of recourse to the facts and the data that really describes a great organization. And my experience with her and other donors is that, in fact, they often don't know what they're giving to. They're driven by reputation. They're driven by sort of a good feeling about people and the relationships between people. And she was sort of, I think, a good example of that. If for no other reason, there were a lot of zeros attached with her giving.
You know, in some ways, that seems like it'd be an advantage to have someone who didn't know a lot about it but just thought it was generally a good thing. Someone who really knew the utility of an organization might come in with a big donation to NPR looking for a specific outcome, kind of be agenda-driven.
Yeah, no, so I think that's a fair point, Ross. Actually, at some point, challenged her investments in the Salvation Army because those were for a very specific project, which perhaps doesn't make sense for the Salvation Army, the Joan Kroc Centers, which are essentially youth centers around the country, sort of youth and recreation centers around the country. But for she did, for investment in NPR, put no strings attached, which I admire. But I think for the charitable sector to be effective in the future, it's going to be a lot more. It's going to have to be based a lot more on sort of what defines an effective charity, and donors requiring them to show that before they're willing to invest. It's the casual nature of giving, where people give without having doing any research, without really benchmarking their investments, that creates a charitable sector in which many charities flourish, even though the data is bad, or more likely, they have no information and no transparency and accountability about the data and the results at all.
Ken Stern, you were forced out of NPR after failing to convince local public radio stations about the importance of the digital future. Some public radio stations thought, and maybe many do still think, that their network, the NPR, was in effect creating ways for listeners to stop listening to their radio stations and get that programming through other means. That's been 5 years now. Does this illustrate some of the dilemmas of charities?
Yeah, so thank you for remembering, bringing back those tough times for me, Ross. I appreciate that. So one of the things that actually set me on this journey, I'm a big admirer of NPR. I spent 9 or 10 great years there. But one of the things that always troubled me about NPR and public radio in general was two things. One is which it was very hard to actually get people to agree on goals and outcomes. I used to say I would walk into a boardroom and there'd be 15 different definitions of success, and I'd come back the next day and there would still be 15, but 15 entirely different ones. Actually makes it very easy to be successful if you don't actually set goals and accountabilities for an organization. And one of the things that happens when you do that is your narrative actually gets dressed up with moral values. And the moral value of working through stations, which is really sort of an issue around technology, technology from the 1970s, obscured sort of the fundamental question for me, which was, how do you help listeners? How do you help users of information, people who need information? How do you reach new and diverse audiences? And it was very hard to have that conversation because there was no agreement and no willingness to have that conversation about what was important and what wasn't and how to measure and be accountable to that. And that's what actually sort of made me wonder, well, I'm a little bit frustrated with NPR. They're a little bit frustrated with me. Is that an issue peculiar to NPR or is the whole charitable system challenged by it? And what I found out was actually sort of surprising in the degree of challenge within the charitable system as a whole.
Well, this kind of gets us the federal funding, which does make up part of the budget for public broadcasters, a pretty small part of KUOW, a larger part for other stations. Does the federal government provide the right incentives in awarding the funding for public broadcasting or the other funding that they award to charitable organizations?
Well, so I'll tell you a story, which is actually recounted in my book. At one point, near the end of my tenure, the CPB, which provides funding to public radio and public television stations, the head of radio at CPB, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, came out and said, we want to tie a small amount of federal funding, really a very trivial amount, to whether stations were successful against some agreed-upon metrics. That had to do with audience reach. It had to do with diversity. It had to do with a whole bunch of things. And they weren't even peculiar to those metrics. They wanted some agreed-upon metrics and actually tie a certain amount of federal funding to success. And they were hooted down badly I tell a story about sort of being shouted down at California Public Radio, but really, really rejected across the entire system. And that has to goes back to the concern I've had of you really need to be accountable to your funders, accountable to your stakeholders against some agreed upon understanding what effectiveness is. If you're not, you're just telling stories.
Now, that's an example from federal funding for public broadcasting. Do you see other examples in both federal funding for charities and also federal regulation of charities?
So on the federal regulation of charities, I would say by and large, there isn't any. The IRS approves about 99.8% of all charitable applications. If you have an envelope, a stamp, and you can fill out a form, you can start a charity. And once a charity starts, really very little oversight either from the federal government or from state regulators at all. I think there are less than 100 people across the nation whose jobs it are to regulate, supervise, hold to the law 1.1 million charities. And even just saying that, it's virtually impossible to think that can be done. In terms of how grants are made, they're made in all sorts of different ways, through different departments, through local funders, through states, through municipalities. I think across the system, across the government system, there really is no concerted effort, at least until OMB announced that effort that would start in 2014, to really be accountable to effectiveness. There's accountable to funding, to accounting, to lowest possible costs, but not to actually the output that we all want from charities and really from government spending as a whole.
Former NPR Chief Executive Ken Stern, his new book is called With Charity for All, Why Charities Are Failing and a Better Way to Give. Ken, thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, Ross.
He joined us from the studios of National Public Radio in New York. David Hyde produces our program with Arwin Nix. We get production help from Cameron Drews and Amber Cortez. Bernard Willett is our engineer from KUOW 94.9 Seattle. I'm Ross Reynolds.